Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good evening. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. on this Thursday night. It is February 1st, 2018. Behind these enemy lines of USA Inc., during the month of February, they call it Black History Month. And I do agree with those who say that we should be studying history for various reasons. I like to study history to see where certain people made certain mistakes and what have you, but we should know our history. We should know ourselves, and we have rich history as black people here on this continent of North America. I know a lot of people like to talk about Africa, but we ignore or a lot of African history right on this continent is ignored a lot. And so I think February or any month where you're just focusing in on history. Now, I know other people, they look at different areas of black, what they call black history, but I like to focus on the history of the land that I was born on and others who were born here and who have made great contributions towards obtaining freedom. We haven't gotten there yet because the United States is still practicing slavery and human trafficking via the 13th Amendment. When we see what a lot of people call over-policing, that's really slave catching. Where they talk about mass incarceration, that's really a continuation of slavery. And we have a rich history of resistance slavery on this continent. We have a rich history in business. Just in all people activity areas, we have a rich history. And we should learn that history so that we don't believe that black people's history started with slavery coming off a boat off of Africa and that's where our history started. No. There's always been free black people on this continent. They've had a rough time of it, but they were still free. And we want to recognize all that history of our free black brothers and sisters or ancestors, as well as those who were enslaved. It's all one big family, and those what seems like two separate communities was really intertwined, because when you talk about the Underground Railroad, I know they like to show a lot of white Quakers and stuff like that on television, but the most prolific conductors of on the Underground Railroad was black folks in the black church, to be specific. All right. And it's just a shame here in this 21st century that black churches are unaware. Number one, that's the number one problem, is a lot of black people are unaware that slavery was never abolished. So we like to try to make them aware and then recruit them to this new abolitionist movement. All right, so tonight is pretty much open lines. If you have a question or comment, you can get it in at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. We'll take your calls. Just hit ** to unmute yourself. I'll see you on the board. Always watch your background noise so that we can preserve the quality of the broadcast. Do have a lot of news to share. It's something always going on. One of the stories, just to give you a quick preview, I want to talk about this story out of Charlotte, because a lot of moves are being made in the state of North Carolina in terms of education in that people activity area. So there was a story out of Charlotte, which is titled "Christianity is Out, Public Money is In, as Charlotte School Makes a Rare Conversion." So what they're talking about is the charter school movement, something that I have always been favorable of, although a lot of black people, and I shouldn't say a lot, I don't know how many, but you have showcased black people in media, and they always talking about saving public school. And I'm like, why you want to save the school-to-prison pipeline? Because that's what it is, and it don't make no sense to save it. And so I have always been open to black people starting their own charter schools, whether they be black Christian schools, black Afrocentric schools. Look, public education is a problem. It shouldn't even be called public education. It should be called public miseducation. And if you got a problem with how your children are being educated, then why you want to save that system, man? It make more sense to take your federal tax dollars that are apportioned to your children and go put them in a school that's going to educate them about who they are, that's going to educate them about real history and not promote the lies of Lincoln, like slavery was abolished in 1865 after the Civil War. That's a lie. You know, all the lies about Christopher Columbus discovering America. They still teaching that stuff in the school to prison pipeline. So I definitely want to share that story with you. Anybody has any thoughts on black people breaking away from the public education system and setting up their own schools? There's always also the option of homeschooling, but homeschooling isn't as easy as some people try to make it sound. You got to have a support network. You got to have a support network. That kind of works out, although I can't convince my daughters to do it. And I'm not going to say that the school system is so terrible where we live, but you always want to supplement your children's income. But I can't convince my daughters to do homeschooling. I mean, they both do work and what have you, but I work from home. My mother is retired. We got other people, relatives in the community that are retired, and it would be nothing for us to get together and homeschool these children. And you know, you get them on this day, I get them on that day. You cover this area, I cover that area. On this day, we going on a field trip, so to speak. So where there's will, there's way. But I also want to acknowledge that a lot of people out there, they don't have that support structure in order to homeschool. So, you know, it would be great if they had a black charter school that they could send their children to. All right, so that's one of the stories that I want to share with you. Also, coming out of the same area, out of Catawba County, which is not that far from here, you had a slave catcher's husband got busted with 65 pounds of cannabis in the house. We were talking about that last night on New Abolitionist Radio with those six cops. No, it was eight cops. Slave catchers in Baltimore and some of the stuff they was doing was selling drugs and what have you. So the slave catcher's husband has been the only one implicated. But I don't see how you could have 65 pounds of cannabis in your house, Miss Police Dispatcher, and you not know about it. Come on now. I ain't that dumb. I am not naive whatsoever. You know you was in on it, but it looks like she's getting shielded. All right, so that's another story. There's a event coming up for you independent new media producers out there. I'll tell you about this webinar that's going down here pretty soon. We posted it to the event section of BTR News. BTRCommunity.com, BTRCommunity.com. The social media platform set up for the listeners of Black Talk Radio. So when I come across these free events, I only post what's free. But I come across these free events, I will post them in our event calendar there on the platform. So there's another story I thought was pretty interesting concerning CEO of USA Inc., Donald Trump. The headline comes to you from PBS NewsHour. That's the public broadcast system. Remember, if you're a black person, don't send your donations to PBS. Send them to Black Talk Media Project. We actually have a listener and a donor who changed over her monthly donation from NPR, National Public Radio, and switched it over to Black Talk Media Project. Let's fund our own public media, okay? But this comes to you from PBS NewsHour. They publish, Trump says it will be hard to unify country without a major event. And I was like, man, that's so cool of him to say that. Now I need to get the context and what the context of what he was talking about. But just that alone by itself, for those that know history, especially concerning what they call 9/11, that you had these individuals put some stuff out there about using false flags to unify a country. They use false flag events to promote what you call patriotism and get everybody together on the same national page. And usually that is to get them behind attacking another nation, and sometimes they will use false flag events to do that. For those that don't know what a false flag event is, let's just say individuals or groups of individuals either working for, indirectly or directly for, a government will commit acts of terror. It will be blamed on somebody else, and then public opinion will be whipped up and all this patriotism will be whipped up, and everybody with bad information about who did what will all say, let's get them, let's go get them, let's kill them all, and all of that. And so history is replete with these type of events. So I thought it was interesting that Donald Trump says, I want to unify the country, but without a major event. Is he acknowledging that major events that the government was behind in the past have been used to, quote unquote, unify the country? I don't know, but we'll take a look at that story. Of course, I also share music with you. I'm a hip hop junkie. I like R&B as well, from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And so we'll be sharing some of that with you throughout this broadcast. Again, if you're tuning in, expecting to hear Sister Cece and Brother Robert 11X Minor. They are off tonight. They have a lot going on. Last I heard from Sister Cece, Brother Robert had like seven little ones he had to look after. So definitely it's hard trying to do a radio program when you got that many young children that you also trying to keep an eye on. Sometimes when it's just me and my grandsons in the house, I have to leave the door open. I have to keep an ear out, make sure they ain't in there beating each other up or tearing the house up or something. So definitely I feel Brother Robert. He got seven of them he got to deal with. All right, so that's what's on tap tonight. Again, the telephone numbers are 704-802-5056. That's our new number. We don't have the toll-free number anymore, but if you are in another country listening, you can go to uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. That's our Uber Conference page, and it'll give you some international numbers that'll connect you to the 704 number. You can also choose to use your computer browser. If you got headphones and what have you, you can call in that way using your computer and some headphones. And there's always the uberconference.com app that you can use, download and use to connect to the program. The controls or the commands work the same. You just hit ** on your keypad. That'll unmute you. Once I see that you are unmuted, I will acknowledge that you have a question and comment. We'll bring you on air. But please, at all times, watch your background noise. So in the meantime, let's go ahead and kick it off with three in a row. We're going to kick it off with some Chaka Khan, What You're Going to Do for Me. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Aaron, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. We were having a little technical difficulties there. Actually, my browser locking up because I'm trying to do too much. And we are back now. So I apologize for any of the disruptions that you may have experienced. I'm actually trying to clear my browser out now so I can pull up some of these news stories for you. Real quick from the conference room at uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. A post was made in there about the actress, comedian Monique. And I've been going back and forth on, I shouldn't say back and forth, but I've had a few exchanges with Monique, primarily on the issue of prison slavery. That dispute that she has with Netflix, I understand that there's information out there where they're talking about Netflix might have offered her $3 million. Now she's posting the contract to Instagram and all that. I'm going to be honest with y'all. I don't care about that stuff. I don't care about that stuff. That's how they suck us in, man, and they distract us from what's really going on. Now, if Monique wants to join our possible proposed boycott of Netflix for throwing, for profiting off of prison slavery entertainment films and what have you, then she's welcome to join us. She's welcome to become part of this new abolitionist movement. But for those that don't know, we have a poll up on Twitter. You can follow us at twitter.com/Black Talk Radio, or I guess properly it's called at Twitter. That's our address on Twitter. And we have a poll, and we're asking people to take the poll so that we can gauge public opinion on whether or not they would support a ban on prison entertainment films. That's what I'm going to call it, because it's entertainment. They're making money off of these individuals who are victims of modern-day slavery and human trafficking, and it's just not right. It's a violation of human rights. And lots of different platforms, Netflix included, Hulu, MSNBC, all these network television companies are showing what I'm calling prison slavery entertainment films. And yeah, so we want to gauge public opinion on that. If you think those should be banned, if you are willing to boycott any other platforms that do not remove those prison entertainment slavery films from their platforms and to stop profiting off of modern day slavery and human trafficking, please take the poll. Whether you don't care, if you're not going to boycott, if you don't think there should be a ban on prison exploitation films, then vote no. But if you think there should be a ban and you would support a boycott of those platforms based on the human rights of these exploited prisoners, then vote yes on the poll. See, we're going to gauge public opinion before we launch into any kind of boycott campaign, because what's the point of calling for a boycott if nobody can identify with you on the issue or they don't believe you because you, you know, whatever. So we want to gauge public opinion before we call for a boycott of these platforms. Ain't no, if nobody cares, then what's the point of calling for a boycott? All right. So what's the point of being a having a boycott? Now, on Twitter, let me pull up Twitter because I tweeted at Monique earlier today since, you know, we've been commenting on that poll. She has responded in that poll I set up. So let me pull up our Twitter page because there was a Fight for 15 rally. Or, you know, that's a campaign that's been going on for quite some time. Do y'all know what Fight for 15 means? It means a $15 an hour minimum federal wage law. That's what that means. Fight for 15. They're fighting for $15 an hour, which still may not be enough to pull people out of poverty. But we, you know, most of the people in the United States are being paid poverty wages. If they're not in prison and victims of prison slavery, where they may or may not get some slave wages, but if you're on the outside, chances are you're getting paid poverty wages, getting paid poverty wages. So I saw someone tweet out something about that. It had Reverend Barber, who's based here in North Carolina. He's with the, he runs the North Carolina NAACP. So Common Dreams actually is the one that tweeted this out. It says, I am ready. Why do you fight? Fight for 15. And Reverend Barber announced fast food worker strike. So let's pull this up. Let's go ahead and pull up this article. Because if I'm going to be concerned about somebody getting some money, I'm going to be more concerned about people who need the most help getting that help. So, on commondreams.org, this was published today, earlier today. We retweeted it out, but it says Fight for 15 and Reverend Barber announced fast food worker strike for racial justice and voting rights. On the 50th anniversary of the Sanitation Workers March in Memphis, labor advocates and the New Poor People, or excuse me, the New People's Poor Campaign will come together across the South. So y'all know Dr. King, before he died, no, he didn't die, before he was murdered, before he was killed, all right, he was working on the Poorest People's Campaign. He had toured the entire United States, primarily the areas where black people live, and he saw the abject poverty that they was living in. You can pull up these clips on YouTube. So when I hear some misinformed black person talking about, you know, back during the days of segregation, black folks had all they needed, and we was doing for self, and we wasn't wanting for nothing, and that doggone Dr. King and them, they got those civil rights laws passed for, you know, and that just killed all black businesses, and we weren't able to take care of our, that's a lie, y'all, that's a lie. All you got to do is just read history, man. Well, if black people was doing so well, why did Dr. King start a poor people's campaign? Why did he tour the nation primarily in the South? Hell, you just had the United Nations leave here last year after they went to Alabama and put out a report talking about you got third world poverty in Alabama. Okay, now you just think about how bad it was during Dr. King's time and before Dr. King. And we have to quit telling these myths. Was there a Black Wall Street? There were several of them. One in Durham, North Carolina. There was one in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Unfortunately, they weren't able to defend what they had built. And terrorists came along and ran them off their land and burnt down their homes and their businesses. But that was not. That those were exceptions to the rule, okay? Most black people, most black people were working in white factories, working in farm, still doing what they call that sharecropping and all that type of stuff. So, you know, whenever I hear somebody say that, I'll be like, either you lying to me because you got an agenda and you're lying in order to make what you're saying sound so true. But look, I look up history. I read history. There's plenty of historical record, and black people did not have everything they needed, just like we don't have everything we need today. So don't blame that on Dr. King, because he passed some laws to where it was unlawful for them to discriminate against you, to make it unlawful for them. This is federal law, to discriminate against you on the job based on your sex, based on your national origin, based on your religion, and based on your quote-unquote race, even though race is a political construct. We'll just say your skin color. Those are laws. Do they violate those laws still? Yes, they violate those laws. But some people are able to get relief under those laws if they gather their evidence properly and get proper representation, and they can fight that. Doesn't mean that they'll win. So, you know, I just don't understand the thinking and trying to blame Dr. King for the problems that black people face today. That's retarded, in my opinion. So anyway, this was a sanitation worker strike because black sanitation workers weren't being paid the same thing as white sanitation workers, didn't get the same benefits. See, so again, you know what I'm saying? So y'all want to blame him. Because now black sanitation workers today have to be paid the same as everybody else based on experience, based on skill, and what have you. There's a federal law that, whereas before, back during then, it was perfectly lawful. And if you didn't like it, then guess what? You'd find somewhere else to work. Good luck trying to find a job where white people own just about everything, okay? And so anyway, 50 years after the sanitation workers in Memphis march with Martin Luther King Jr. to demand higher wages and safer labor conditions, fight for $15, and Reverend Dr. William J. Barber are planning a fast food worker strike in 24 cities across the southern United States to advocate for racial justice and voting rights. There's no separation between the moral battle for voting rights and participation in democracy and the moral battle against systemic poverty. These battles go together, said Barber, who last year revived King's Poor People's Campaign and has supported the fight for $15 minimum wage movement. In a statement announcing plans for the protests, which are scheduled for February the 12th, Fight for 15 compared the plight of the sanitation workers 50 years ago to that of fast food workers today. Now, we carry on the same fight, the group declared. In 1968, 40% of Memphis sanitation workers qualified for public assistance. In 2018, 52% of fast food workers are on public assistance. And not just fast food workers, people that work at places like Walmart, which also exploits prison slave labor. You know, when people do those gift returns and package returns, and those have to be broken down and repackaged, Walmart gets prison slaves to do that for them. And then everybody else is working for less than $15 an hour. And then, regardless of what their hourly pay is, Walmart has a policy to where they don't have full-time workers. They will cut you off at 39 hours a week. And because they're already paying you poverty wages, you may qualify for Medicaid and food stamps. You know, you may qualify, you know, because oftentimes it's left up to the states, and we know they've been cutting into that fund and making it harder for people to get food assistance and whatnot. So I say they may be able to qualify. So anyway, again, this is starting February the 12th. I don't know why they're not calling for a strike. I would be calling for a strike. You should be striking anyway. If you're an abolitionist, you should not be going to McDonald's. You should not be going to Wendy's because they use, or their contractors use, prison slave labor. So those are two fast food joints you do not want to do business with, in addition to them not paying their workers properly and paying them a slave wage. So that's McDonald's and Wendy's that you should be permanently boycotting and not spending your money there. All right, so now, I had asked Monique over the days that I've been talking to her via Twitter She won't call me. She has my phone number. The number is public, and she won't have a private conversation. But if she want to keep it on Twitter, we can keep it on Twitter. But I have asked her over the past couple of days, hey, Monique, have you ever supported the fight for $15 an hour for these poverty wage workers out here? You know, show me your social capital that you've invested in the community. Show me some community center that you're sponsoring. Show me some program that you and other celebrities and corporations have partnered up with to pay for this program that's going to help the people who need the most help. Show me these things. Show me your social capital. You want to withdraw social capital from the black community. Therefore, we need to check the bank to make sure you got some social capital on deposit in the community. And I just simply could not find those things. So, she never responded to whether or not she had expressed any support for the fight for 15 poverty wage workers out there. So I sent her a tweet today, tagging her in this tweet by Common Dreams about the fight for 15 and Reverend Barber announcing the fast food worker strike. I said, Monique, you should consider becoming a champion for the people who are being paid poverty wages, working hard to stay out of prison slavery while CEOs and boards give themselves multi-million dollar annual salaries. Hashtag social capital, black heart for black love. All right. So Monique has not responded, and I don't think that she will. But again, I just want to use this issue. Not to pick on Monique. I wouldn't even brought her up if she wasn't mentioned in the chat room. But, you know, that's okay. If people want to talk about it, we can talk about it. But I'm going to talk about it from an angle to where I'm using my, how can I put this? I'm coming at it from a perspective that makes sense to me. Okay, so that's where I'm coming from. I do not engage in idolatry. I don't have any emotional investments in celebrities or anything like that. Do I watch television from time to time? Yes, it's usually the news or a sports event, but I haven't watched sports in over a year now, going close to over a year, because of Colin Kaepernick being mistreated by the NFL. And that's about the only sport I would watch on TV. I like basketball and all that, but it's kind of boring to me to watch it on television. But I would watch football on Sundays, just watch one team. I wouldn't sit there all day watching football games and whatnot. But no, I'm not watching football, the NFL, because of the boycott against the NFL for what they did to Colin Kaepernick. So this is what I'm talking about. We have to stop allowing these people to get us in our emotions and leverage our social capital on their behalf so they can get these big giant paydays. And they ain't never shown that they have invested in the community and in this case has actually participated in projects that have exploited prisoners' human rights by making this prison slavery entertainment films and what have you. Now, speaking of social capital, I have been retweeting out, and I don't know who came up with the term social capital. Looks like the business world came up. I'm appropriating that term. I'm taking it from y'all, okay, because I don't think y'all are using the term properly. You know, I didn't coin the term, but I'm going to appropriate it, and I'm going to give my own definition of social capital. So I've been tweeting or retweeting all the different celebrities that's giving money to grassroots organizations, standing with Colin Kaepernick in his million-dollar pledge. Of course, he's already reached his million in his million-dollar pledge to give $1 million to grassroots organizations. Now they're in overtime, and they still giving money. They still giving money out to these social organizations. So I've been tweeting about that. Hashtag social capital investments. Let me see. We got this tweet from Colin Kaepernick. Says, thanks, Steve Stout. for being part of the $1 million pledge to donate to organizations fighting towards social justice. So Steve Stout, I don't know who he is. He has a microphone in front of him. Maybe he's a radio host or something like that in the mainstream. So Steve Stout is donating $10,000. $65,000 total is going to Communities United for Police Reform. So Colin Kaepernick had donated $25,000 back in October. So more money has been given. It's called the 10 for 10 Encore, where Colin Kaepernick called on 10 of his friends, 10 of his celebrity friends, to give money to these social organizations in the community working on these issues. So $65,000 total went to Communities United for police reform. All right. Let me see. Here is another one. Let me pull it up. All right. Here is Colin Kaepernick thanking. Who is this person? See, I don't know all these celebrities, you know, but apparently this woman named Zendaya, I don't know what she does, who she is. I don't keep up with celebrities like that, but apparently she's a celebrity, and she's donating $15,000 to the Colin Kaepernick Know Your Rights camps. These are little seminars that they have been having all over the country and bringing in young people and teaching them how to know their rights and how to exert their rights when they get stopped walking down the street by a slave catcher or something. So let's go ahead and listen to what Colin Kaepernick had to say about this $15,000 being donated to the Know Your Rights camps.
My brothers and sisters want to keep this thing going, so we're going to do just that. $1 million pledge, 10 for 10 encore. This next sister is a singer, actress, activist with a genuine soul and spirit, Zendaya. Zendaya donated $15,000 to Know Your Rights Camp, whose goal is to build a stronger generation of youth through education, self-empowerment, holistic health, and properly handling interactions with police and law enforcement. Zendaya, thank you for believing in our vision and always being an advocate for the people.
And thank you, Colin Kaepernick, for raising the bar on these celebrities. You know, Colin Kaepernick did not call for no boycott when the NFL, nobody offered him a contract. And he's definitely worth it. There's no doubt about his skill and talent on a football field. So he has a lawsuit again using the proper venues to file lawsuits because we have these laws that Dr. King and others got on the books. So you don't like how your employer is treating you? You think you got a case? You think you're being discriminated against? Get an attorney and file a lawsuit. Okay, you don't got to go to the EEOC and file a complaint like I did when I first found out that white women have a minority status, and it's perfectly okay to pay white women far more than black men who have, stronger education credentials and job skills and job performance. Hey, she's white, she's a minority, we cannot file a complaint against her. But if you don't want to go to EEOC, you can definitely hire an attorney like Colin Kaepernick did. So Colin Kaepernick, in my opinion, has raised the bar on these celebrities. Before you ask me to boycott something that Colin Kaepernick isn't asking people to do, but they're doing it because it's the right thing to do. He didn't need to ask us, and he's not doing it because of money. This isn't about money for him. This is about our brothers and sisters being gunned down in the streets by slave catchers. Okay, and he was taking a knee and letting people know, using his platform to highlight the people's issues. Okay, so he has raised the bar, as far as I'm concerned. If a celebrity want to come out and ask me to boycott something, and most of the things they ask to boycott, like the Oscars, I don't even watch. So you know, I'm going to check the bank, I'm going to check the community bank, and we're going to see how much social capital you have invested. If you don't have any social capital invested in any organizations in the community, If you're not helping those organizations to raise money, if you don't have your own foundation and out here doing stuff in the community or getting corporations to give up money to sponsor this or sponsor that for people who need the most help, then guess what? Then we're going, if you go to make a withdrawal of social capital and you don't have none in the community bank, then it's going to come back insufficient funds. Have a seat. Okay? That's just how I feel about it. All right? That's how I feel about it. It's not for me. I'm not going to unite with someone based on their skin color, because then that means then I should unite with David Clark Jr., the former sheriff slave catcher out of Minneapolis. Okay? No. Well, that means then I should stand in solidarity with Condoleezza Rice. Well, I should stand in solidarity with Clarence Thomas or any of these proxies that's doing tremendous damage to the people. So don't ask me to do anything that's not based on justice, that is not helping the people that need the most help, because I'm not trying to hear it. I don't care. I don't care. We got people in slavery. I care about slavery. That's what I care about. And so you can take the pledge, or excuse me, you can take our poll at twitter.com/BlackTalkRadio and let us know where you stand on the issue of prisons, what I call it, prison slavery entertainment films, where they're making hundreds of millions of dollars off of brothers and sisters in the jails, in the prisons. They're not being paid as actors, although they may get a listing as a actor, get a listing in IDMB with an acting credit. Even though they don't belong to the actors union, they didn't get paid for their work. Their conditions are slavery. You know, this is crazy. I don't understand why someone hasn't pointed this out before. This is exploitation at its highest level. Exploitation. It's not right, and it's a violation of their human rights. And so we're going to be calling Hollywood to task. We're going to call out these TV networks based in New York. We're calling you out to the carpet. Time out for these prison slavery entertainment films. We know this is wrong. If you're a legal organization out there and you come across this broadcast or podcast, that's something that y'all need to take a look at. It's suing these companies on behalf of the prisoners. This is exploitation at the highest order. All right, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA, Inc. The telephone number is 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056, if you have a question or comment. But you're going to have to get it in on the other side, because it's time for another three in a row. I'm going to kick some soul to soul. This is Back to Life, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio on the Black Talk Radio Network. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA, Inc. Now, right before our three in a row music break, we heard from Janet Jackson. In there, we heard from Earth, Wind, and Fire, one of the greatest bands of all time. I mean, I was like up on Earth, Wind, and Fire back when I was in elementary school in the 70s, man. For real, I mean, great music, great music. All right, so I mentioned before that three in a row that we had this Twitter poll. So this is what the Twitter poll says. For-profit films using prisoners in documentaries, comedy specials, and or reality television shows do not compensate prisoners what they pay extras in Hollywood. Poll question. This is the question part. Would you support a ban or boycott on these types of exploitative films on the basis of human rights? So, 49 people have, come on, y'all. Now, I know it's more of y'all out there that listen to Black Talk Radio, that's listening right now. We had a poll embedded on our website, so all the people that visit Black, I know y'all seeing this poll. Come on now. Take the poll. Help us gauge public opinion and thereby push public opinion. And thus far, out of the 49 votes that we have accumulated, and there's only 3 days left for the poll, 82% would support a ban and boycott on these type of exploitative films. I'm calling them prison slavery entertainment films. And 18% voted no. So that is 82% yes for the ban boycott, 18% no for the ban boycott. Again, 3 days left in the poll. You will find it on blacktalkradionetwork.com. And if you're on Twitter, we're at Black Talk Radio. Take the poll, y'all. Please take the poll. And then share it. Share it. Make sure you share the poll. I share it several times a day to get it out in front of people. Y'all know how social media works. Sometimes, you know, you got all these people following you or subscribe to a page, but they don't all see everything that you post. So, you know, maybe that's why we only got 49 votes. This is a very important issue concerning the most important issue of our time, of any time, and that's slavery. Again, slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment does not abolish slavery. It makes it legal as punishment for crime. And they can make up laws that criminalize everything from under the sun. So, you know, we saw that, what was known as the Black Codes. Now we got this drug war that targets certain communities more than it targets other communities. So prison slavery affects everyone, all right? It affects everyone. Even if you're not in prison, it's certainly affected me. It's certainly affected me. I'm very stressed out because I live in a nation that's practicing slavery. Very stressful. And I am not the person that I could just turn a blind eye to it. And I have to be involved. I have to do whatever the Creator has determined my role to be. I need to do that. I need to do that. So we're asking for your support. Please take the poll. It is pinned to the top of the page of Black Talk Radio on Twitter, and it's also embedded in our website, blacktalkradionetwork.com. All right, let me get to some of the stories. Do want to do a quick Black History Month feature. I sent this out over social media, but it came out over Twitter. Somebody tweeted it, so I grabbed it, retweeted it, posted it in btrcommunity.com. Remember, btrcommunity.com, social media platform, $24 a year subscription, and it goes to the nonprofit. So think of it as you're making a donation to a nonprofit, and in return, as a gift, you're getting a subscription to a social media platform where you can engage in your social media activities in full anonymity, because your employer and prospective employers, they don't need to see everything that you're posting on social media. They don't need to see everything that you're discussing. They'll use it against you. All right, so today, the Reverend Dr. Henry Highland Garnett is the most famous African-American you never learn anything about during Black History Month. And that's sort of true, because they show us the same faces. Not to say those faces aren't worthy of recognition, but it's the same ones every year. The same core group. The same core group. So we have to dig back into the history vault and bring these things up, or else we'll believe that, hey, all we were a bunch of victimized people put into slavery here. We won't know nothing about the free Black people or those who were enslaved, who got their freedom and then helped others get free. So today, let's focus on Reverend Dr. Henry Highland Garnett, who is a famous African-American abolitionist. They're not even putting in here that he was an abolitionist, although it's implied, but that you never learn anything about during Black History Month. In the 19th century, however, Garnett, who lived from 1815 to 1882, was recognized as one of the foremost anti-slavery organizers in the world. He was the founding president of the American and Foreign Anti-Slavery Society, an organization that waged international campaigns against human trafficking. And Cuban patriot Jose Marti called him America's Moses. And though he is often left out of the popular story of abolitionism, Reverend Garnett's work of building bridges of solidarity offers a unique perspective on what it means for the U.S. to value human rights in an international context in the 21st century. That's what I'm trying to get y'all to recognize, is that these prisoners got human rights. And these people taking these cameras into the prison to create these reality TV shows, to tape comedy shows, and all, these are for-profit endeavors. These aren't nonprofits. The proceeds are not going to a nonprofit organization working on any kind of issues. This is strictly going into their bank account. Okay? These are for-profit films. And I'm trying to get y'all to recognize that these for-profit films are exploiting the human rights of the victims of modern slavery and human trafficking. Let's see. Born a victim of slavery in Maryland, Garnett was carried by his parents to freedom in the North at the age of 9. As a teenager, Garnett attended Noyes Academy in New Hampshire, an integrated institution of higher learning founded by anti-slavery advocates. Suffering from an ailment that would eventually cost him his leg, the enterprising student discovered one day that area white farmers were plotting to destroy the school. Garnett's biographer noted that he spent most of the day in casting bullets in anticipation of the attack. And when the whites finally came, he replied to their fire with a double-barreled shotgun blazing from his window and soon drove the cowards away. Though the mob eventually destroyed the school, Garnett's covering fire allowed his fellow students to escape under the cover of darkness. This warrior right here, this is a young warrior. Reverend Garnett's speeches on slavery and liberation captivated audience at the National Negro Convention held in Buffalo in 1843. The 27-year-old minister came forward with an audacious plan to end slavery, urging an armed uprising of the slaves. See, this is why y'all not hearing about him. And this is why during this month, I'm only highlighting abolitionists, those who were in rebellion to slavery. And if they use violence or nonviolence, doesn't much matter to me. So it goes on to say that the 27-year-old minister came forward with an audacious plan to end slavery, urging an armed uprising of the victims of slavery. If you would be free in this generation, here is your only hope, he said. However much you and all of us may desire it, there is not much hope of redemption without the shedding of blood. If you must bleed, let it all come at once. Rather die free men than live to be enslaved. Garnett came to this radical conclusion because he believed that it was the only way to stop the United States from spreading slavery via warfare across the continent. The pharaohs are on both sides of the blood-red waters, Reverend Garnett lectured. You cannot move en masse to the dominions of the British Queen, nor can you pass through Florida and overrun Texas and at least find peace in Mexico. The propagators, it's an old English word, of American slavery are spending their blood and treasure that they may plant the black flag in the heart of Mexico and riot in the halls of Montezuma's. Garnett interpreted the contested U.S. invasion of Mexico that launched the Mexican-American War 1856 as a diabolical plan to replant slavery's banner in a republic that had effectively abolished chattel bondage. In contrast to those politicians who preached the hatred of Mexicans, Garnett reminded Americans that fugitive victims of slavery regularly found sanctuary in Mexico. Garnett lauded the Mexican people as liberty-loving brethren and ultra-abolitionists. Garnett's understanding of the role that Mexican and Latin American abolitionists played in the global struggle against slavery informed his later human rights crusades. All right, so I'm going to end it there. There's a lot more that has been written here. I'm not going to read it all to you on air. It has been posted to my BTR News profile inside of BTRCommunity.com. So I salute Reverend Dr. Henry Highland Garnett. All right, so in that story, he was talking about as a child belonging to this school, this integrated school that the white farmers wanted to destroy, and how he spent his time casting bullets so that he can shoot back at the terrorists when they came, and he did, and they weren't able to save the school. But talking about schools and saving schools, I do not think we need to be trying to save the public, what they call it, school-to-prison pipeline. We don't need to be saving that. I keep hearing all these people complain about they still teaching Christopher Columbus discovered America when he never set foot on this continent. All right? They keep teaching the lie that Lincoln freed the slaves, the victims of slavery, I should say. That's a lie. They keep teaching that the Civil War ended slavery in this country. That's a lie. And we talk about all the mistreatment that little black and brown boys and girls face in the school-to-prison pipeline. But then on the flip side of that, whenever a certain party starts talking about cutting public education funding and what have you, and giving the individual an opportunity to use those federal tax dollars set aside for every child to go to a school of their choice, then we, unfortunately, in the black community, we want to save it. We want to save this very pipeline that's sending our children to prison and teaching them all these lies. That's schizophrenia right there. You know, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, so y'all excuse me if I don't know all the definitions of these mental illnesses that we suffer from. But that's kind of schizophrenic, or at least it's contradictory. How are you going to talk about a school-to-prison pipeline and then at the same time you want to keep funding that pipeline? All right? So if you want public education, then you need to, it needs an overhaul. Let me put it that way. It needs an overhaul. And if you live in a place, in a city or a town or somewhere, and the victims are the predominant population, I can't accept any excuse from you that you haven't taken control of your local school board. Because the only way that doesn't happen is because you don't vote and you don't run for these offices to take control of your local school system. But getting to this story, out of North Carolina, where Black Talk Media Project is based, and by the way, if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056, hit **, to unmute yourself. Just watch your background noise. I am checking the board. Greetings to those who are just listening. This article comes to you from the CharlotteObserver.com. It is titled, "Christianity is Out, Public Money is In as Charlotte School Makes a Rare Conversion." Let me read this excerpt here. Mountain Island Day School, a private Christian school, was recently approved to convert to a... This is actually where I live. I know if you look at my Facebook profile sometimes, it'll give a location. It'll give Mountain Island as that location, although this is really Rankin Town. named after our ancestors and what have you that founded this area. But Mountain Island Day School, a private Christian school, was recently approved to convert to a public charter school in August. That means that they will have to turn their weekly chapel into a non-religious assembly. They will take down the plaques with Bible verses and religious quotes, and the steeple may be coming down because it makes the roof leak. Founder Tom and Tammy Winstead said they wrestled with the decision, but ultimately decided that the $3 million a year in public money they can bring in as a charter school helps them better serve low and moderate income students in the Paw Creek area. They say education has always been their main mission, and things like compassion and justice can be taught without referring to any specific faith. That's an excerpt they have under the picture. And these are white people. These are white people. And I'm not going to say anything bad because they're white. But how come black people aren't making these moves? And I'm sure there are some black people who have made those moves. Let me correct my language. There is a Black Homeschoolers Network out there that we have promoted over the network. The organizers have been guests on various programs on the network, and that is something we support. There are Afrocentric schools I have reported on over the years, but this is not something that is discussed as an option widely in the black community. You know why? Because most black people who are in the area of politics, which this would fall under the area of politics and education, but politics controls education. But most of those are Democrats, right? And what's Democrats all about? Saving the school, the prison pipeline, because it works just fine, and putting a whole bunch of victims of slavery on the prison plantation. So we want to save it. We look at it as a way to save black jobs for black teachers and what. Well, how about creating your own job? Why about these black teachers get together, find a little building or somewhere, put their little finances together. Brother Robert 11X Minor, he has experience in real estate. He knows how to buy commercial property and what have you. He can even show you how to get some property without putting no money down and what have you. Why isn't there a mass movement for this? Because the media controls the minds of the masses. And most black people that's on television is on these networks, whether we're talking about radio or whether we're talking about television. And they are pushing the Democratic agenda to save the school to prison pipeline. And they're not much about black autonomy or black empowerment or black self-determination. They're about doing their jobs for the entities that they doing jobs for so that they can keep collecting six-figure paychecks. This is why it's very important that we build the black media institution across this country that I'm going to call National Black Public Radio, that the Black Talk Media Project is involved in. Because media controls the minds of our masses. And then to gain further control through miseducation, we got the school to prison pipeline. We need to think differently. We need to do something different. We see these schools are not serving us well. So I don't see why this would be controversial to any black person or brown person for that matter. And again, we know we can't create schools that discriminate against white students or whatnot, but I just can't see a whole bunch of white people wanting to put their kids in a black charter school or Afrocentric school. But it is important to know the law, because we got people that will tell you, we're going to create this black school and it's only going to have black children. And no, you're not, because that is a violation of the Civil Rights Act. So you cannot be promoting nothing like that. Now, you can say, hey, we some black people, We're creating this charter school for our community. You got to be codified, man. That's what it's about. It's about being codified. It's not being about afraid to say anything, but it is about the path of least resistance, and codification will offer that path of least resistance. So you just got to be codified in your language. But I don't see why this should present a problem to the greater black community here behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. So let's read a little bit from the article. It says, weekly chapel will become student assembly. Bible classes and prayer at lunch must end. The plaque with a verse from the book of Jeremiah will be removed from the entry. Even a steeple that stands over Mountain Island Day School will be gone in August when the K-12 Christian school reopens as a charter school. In exchange for removing the trappings of religion and agreeing to meet state standards, the school will get about $3 million a year in public money. So where my black folks at in North Carolina? Come on, my black educators. Where y'all at? All this money, you know, come on. Founder Tammy Winstead knows what some people think of schools like hers. A whole lot of religion, a whole lot of rules, and not a lot of education. In fact, she says a child, she went to a Christian school just like that. She did go to a Christian school like that is what she said. But she and husband Tom Winstead, a youth pastor with degrees in divinity and Christian education, set out to make their school different. That's why the Winstead said they're well positioned to make a shift that appears to be a first in North Carolina. The Christian to charter conversion marks another milestone in a state that's investing heavily in alternatives to traditional public schools. I say again, black folks, how has the U.S. public education system served your child? How did it serve you when you were in school? Why are you, I would have to say that they failed us. They failed to educate black people about black history. They told us a whole bunch of lies about the founding of this country, the discovery of this country, about who all fought in the revolution, like just white men did it all by themselves. And I mean, they just lied to us every turn. We get white supremacy for education. That's what we get. So why you want to keep our children stuck in that? Why do we want to save the school to prison pipeline? It makes no sense to me. And if you are in North Carolina and you are an educator and you are a black person, and especially if you work in the public school system, well, y'all about to lose some funding. So y'all need to be getting ahead of the curve, so to speak, and getting y'all plans together to start y'all public charter schools. What you gonna do? You gonna sit on the sideline and complain while doing nothing, while these other people get access to? They're getting $3 million. We got a call from NYC, area code 646. Thank you for chiming in to BTR News with Scotty Reed on this Thursday night. What's on your mind? Give us your name and your question or comment. 646.
He said,
hey, Tag, how are you?
You and I'm well. Peace to the network at large. Peace to you, Brother Scotty. It's dope to hear you on a Thursday evening, and very important topics are being discussed. One of the things that I just wanted to kind of underline about what's being discussed at present, actually, I was introduced to textually. As far as like a work of literature that like, or a historical work that fully addresses this question, is a work called Top Down that I was introduced to through the Black Talk Radio Network. I can't recall off top what broadcast that was, but it was a professor out of Canada, if I'm not mistaken, and this work Top Down, it basically is interrogating the co-optation of the community movements, particularly around education, that occurred, you know, throughout the country, but especially there's a heavy focus on community control over education efforts in New York. And so I just wanted to kind of highlight that because, you know, just thinking back, this was a couple of years ago that I first heard about this book during one of the broadcasts on the network, checked it out. I think the woman who wrote it, I think her last name was Hunter. It might be Karen Hunter. But, you know, very well executed work. And it's very revealing as regards not only the efforts of the state to basically squelch our efforts at every turn, you know, from, you know, it outlines the efforts of, you know, these foundations in great detail, how some of these so-called philanthropic foundations really, you know, weasel their way into developing progressing moments and movements and basically buy their way into them as a means of, you know, keeping them from developing how as they should. So I just wanted to kind of point toward that particular text. It's called Top Down. The main focus is on the Ford Foundation of that text, but it goes into a lot of the history around community control of education in particular. But, you know, the development of community control went into all sorts of different fields, particularly during that moment in the late 60s through the 70s and even into the 80s. And, you know, we see it in a lot of different works by those who were on the ground working on it, such as Asada Shakur's autobiography. And, you know, just to kind of highlight the present day aspect of it, you know, the community control over the police, you know, developments and coalition efforts, you know, are still ongoing, you know, have been picked back up here in New York, but throughout the country, you know, in various states and, you know, and are still working toward, you know, seizing control back from the state over our own, you know, efforts and operations and, you know, essentially sovereignty when it comes down to it. I know that's a trigger term out here in the BIE age, but I just wanted to kind of bring that out or bring it back out as it was brought out a couple years ago, I think, on one of the broadcasts.
So, Tag, let me ask you a question, Tag. So in the context of the way I've been discussing it here in North Carolina, I mean, do you see this as an opportunity for black folks to have autonomy in education, or should we keep our eggs in the public school basket?
It's an important and involved question. You know, my inclination generally is yes, toward seizing that autonomy, which is ours when it comes down to it. You know, I was peeping out a Tando radio show earlier tonight, and, you know, it speaks to some of the various ills that can come about when, you know, the very, let's say, unsavory efforts of the state and of outside forces and non-state entities kind of converge to put us in that place of, you know, just the raw state of affairs, you know, the actual reality outside of the, you know, confusion and these means of kind of diverting us from, you know, what our real concerns should be. And so in that vein and in that light, to me, any opportunity to, you know, seize for ourselves our own destinies, especially as regards something so critical as the education of the next generations, you know, I see as a perfect opportunity to exercise, you know, what it is that we talk about and what it is that we are building toward, you know. So To me, community control over education, over the slave catchers, you know, to whatever degree that is possible, to me, it's possible, you know, to whatever degree we bring ourselves to it, and all of these other elements, you know, aspects of our lived experience, health, you know, these are necessities for us. So yes, I would say, while I totally hear the concerns that, you know, the state of public education is, you know, abysmal right now. And a lot of that is very intentional. You know, we can trace a lot of it back to the so-called No Child Left Behind Act. You know, this has been decades in the making of essentially tanking public education for many of the, you know, regions in which our communities' children are being so-called educated, and then, you know, diverting all of the resources to these, you know, privately backed charter schools. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, frankly, you know, where these public schools are kind of being exposed intentionally, organized the right way, we can pick that slack up and just take them over ourselves. And it seems to me that that's our best chance for survival as regards, you know, what it is that we are learning and what it is that we are transmitting to the next generation, you know.
All right. Well, thank you for your input, Tag.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So I want to speak to something that Tag just talked about. Now, while he was speaking and I was listening to what he was saying, I also had thoughts entering my mind. So we keep talking about how they're closing schools and building prisons. All right, so if they're closing schools, then we should be able to get them on the cheap then, shouldn't we? Again, I understand the politics of No Child Left Behind. I understand the intentional defunding of these schools, but these schools were a problem even before Bush came into office. Any school that is not teaching a black child or a brown child history that is specific to them, then that child is being shortchanged. They've been teaching white supremacy. That's what we get from the history books in the school curriculum. It's white supremacy. Science is what it is. Math is what it is. Art is what it is. Physical, you know, ed, gym class, whatever you go, it is what it is. But where we suffer the most is in these history classes, these social studies classes. This is where the social engineering occurs. And this is where our black children's minds are infected with white supremacy and black self-doubt, because they don't see themselves reflected in America's history. And we have a very rich history here in America. So I understand. So we obviously, the Democrats, not that I'm a Democrat or support the Democrats, but, you know, they've been saying and warning us, oh, they defunding public education, they defunding public education. But, hell, Barack Obama was definitely on the charter school bandwagon. His education secretary. So I'm saying, given the winds being as what they are, that it seems to me the perfect counter would be, soon as they close a school, is for the community to buy back that school. Let's get that school on. Hey, what you going to do with that building? Are you closing it down? Hey, I'll buy it from you for a dollar. Whatever, whatever we need to do to gain control of the physical building. And then we open them back up as public charter school, Afrocentric schools, black public charter schools. A question is coming from Oldis Griffin. Funding from where? Where would the funding come from? The funding would come from the people themselves. But as I just read in this story here in the state of North Carolina, by them changing from a Christian school to a public charter school, they're looking at a budget of $3 million that's going to come from the state. So it's going to come from the state. That's where the money's going to come from. So each child The way the voucher program works, each child has a price tag in terms of tax dollars that go to whatever institution that child goes to. So those dollars will go to the black public charter school that they're in. That's where the funding will come from. The funding will come from us. This is why I said, and I'm trying to say this without emotion, but look, while we don't have great wealth in the black community, we still have income, and we can still pool our resources, and we can build these institutions. And I meant what I said. If we don't have a proper budget for Black Talk Media Project by 2019, I'm shutting Black Talk Radio Network down. I'm shutting it down. Because it is not right for the few to be funding all of this for the many. I was just looking at the stats, working on the stats. It's the first of the month, so our January stats are out. So I still have some sorting to do, but just on a digital radio station, just one digital radio station now. We got many, but I don't keep up with the other station stats. But just on this station you're listening to right now, we had over 55,000 listeners in the month of January. So I understand some of those might be drive-by listeners, so let's just cut that number in half and say it was 25,000. There's no reason that the Black Talk Media Project shouldn't have $25,000 coming into its coffers every month. There's no reason for that. And before I keep coming out of my personal bank account and the very few donors that we do have, before I allow us to continue to be exploited, then I'll shut it down. If the people that consume it don't want to support it, then it's gone. So we have to start putting our money where our mouth is. We say we need this, that, and the other, but then if you need it, then you want it, then you got to pay for it. Let's stop playing broke all the time like we don't have any resources. Again, we don't have as many resources as white folks in this country. But if enough of us come together, put our pennies together, so to speak, we can fund these institutions. Let's take this call from Otis. Otis, did you have a question or comment on this topic?
I don't know. I'll have to filter myself on that. What I was going to say is, because I was a parent at a late age, I think I brought it up with you several times talking on New Abolitionists. I've watched the change in education that Tag was talking about, and I'm telling you that I've done enough research, and I understand what you're talking about, but I'm saying to you, money is so calcified in this country. So what you're talking about has already been addressed 10, 12 years ago with ALEC, with No Child Left Behind, that Tag was talking about. And you don't have enough time on this program for me to convince you, but I can send you the documentation from my bookmarks because I've been following this. I was a father at 40 years old, so I was old enough to step back and look at what was going on from a wider berth than most parents do.
Okay, now, Otis, I've been following this issue quite closely myself.
Let me finish, Scotty. Okay. I'm getting ready to tell you. That newspaper article that you're talking about in your hometown with those people, do me a favor. Find out who financed them so they could qualify for a $3 million grant from the state.
Let me give you the correct information.
Been through some of that.
Let me give you the correct information. It is not a grant. It is a current standing Christian school, and by them.
No, Scotty. You said that they qualify for $3 million.
I did not say that. I said they will have a $3 million budget. That's what I said.
Okay.
Otis, you're not going to overtalk me on my own program, bro. Come on now. If I'm trying to interject, allow me to interject. Now, to clarify what you said, let's not move on until we get clarification. And if I misspoke, I misspoke. So let me clarify any words I may have misspoken. They're already a school. They're a Christian school. They already have a student body, okay? And by them converting from a Christian school to a public school, that means all the funds that's tied to the individual students put in a collective pool is going to come up to a budget of $3 million by them converting from Christian to public charter school. So that we're clear on that. Now, please continue.
Okay, so I'm not going to argue with you. What I'll do is try to go into the public information in North Carolina and explain to you what I'm saying to you, because I watched the difference between Tucson, Arizona, which I brought up in a conversation with you back when y'all let me guest host, versus the difference in what they do in Virginia. And I'm telling you, I followed this enough to know that the state legislatures have set this up. You just don't go in and get a charter. I'm going to tell you, three or four Dallas Cowboy players were drawn into trying to do this in the Dallas area, and you find out the same thing. You have to have some kind of substantial financial collateral to be able to go into the programs that you're talking about. And well, I'm not going to debate
this school
it
does
with
not
you.
Have
I'm telling you,
those finances. The roof is leaking on this school. They're about to remove the steeple. They're doing some of it. Doesn't take all that much money. But then again, Otis, I'm hearing excuses from you, brother. With all due respect, I'm hearing excuses from you. Wait a minute again. So what's the alternative? Give me an alternative.
This is what I'm saying to you. I'm not saying that what you're saying is not possible. What I'm saying is it's not that easy. And I brought it up with you earlier, trying to convince the black people who control capital to come together and make this possible. I'm 64 years old. I've had these conversations long before I even knew Black Talk Radio. I applaud what you do, but what I'm saying to you is I think the system is so far rigged now, the black people who can afford to help initiate it are not concerned with that. Most of them are concerned with where they're going to visit somewhere in the world that they ain't never been. I'm not in disagreement with you on the need for it. What I'm saying to you is I think we're so far gone till it's not going to happen.
Well, I do not disagree with you on that part, and that is why I talked about the need for a black media institution, a national public black radio. That is what the Black Talk Media Project is trying to build, because we know people's minds are messed up by the corporate media. And I would also say that you never know what somebody might do. And I never meant to make it sound like it's easy. You had to file the paperwork. You got to have a business plan. There are going to be some finances. But we got resources in our community.
I'll put it to you this way. I looked and saw that I've been about 4.5 years following you. And I can tell you, I guarantee you, I've talked personally to 10 or 12 people that I know that could afford to send some money your way. And I don't associate with them anymore, because I'm in a home repair business. When they thought they could put money behind me and make money off of my back, they were coming to me. When I tried to send them to your project and with the qualifications you had, none of them have stood up. So I'm not in disagreement or against you. What I'm saying is I've hit my frustration point, and if they're not for me, then I just don't deal with them anymore.
And I understand that sentiment, and I'm the same way. That's why I'm saying if these people don't have social capital invested in the community, don't ask me to boycott nothing so you can get a big payday or something like that. But the mindset that you're talking about, Otis, is actually the predominant number of listeners on Black Talk Radio. Again, 55,000 people listen to just the radio stream. That's not those who downloaded podcasts. That's a whole other set of tens of thousands of people who are not contributing to what they're taking from. So I know the stinking ass mindset is out there. But Otis, I got to move on, man. I got another call.
Yeah.
And we can revisit this next week on BTR News or the next time I'm on air. Tag wanted to jump back in. Tag, did you want to jump back in? We got about 9 minutes left in the broadcast.
Yes, and I appreciate that, and I will be as concise as possible. Just, A, I want to make clear that I don't feel that I have any clear-cut solutions to the problem of, you know, the mass charterization that's going on, the mass, you know, bankrupting of public schools that's going on. So, you know, it sounds to me that, you know, those of us who are discussing this right now are, you know, largely in agreement that there's a major problem that needs to be addressed. And one of the so-called solutions to the problem that the state, you know, itself has created seems to be this like mass charterization that's going on, which is in no way to say, you know, as articulated by characters such as Betsy DeVos, you know, coming out of the Trump administration and others, you know, and we see what they did in New Orleans and in various other places. But this is, of course, not to say that as a model, that model is untenable. It's just simply to say that the way that it's being wielded by these corporations and by the state is not to our benefit, you know. So I did want to just kind of bring that up because, you know, I don't know if that was clear in my initial comment. But then also just relatedly, I would like to kind of raise the name of a school that seems to be addressing this kind of issue. I'm not very clear on it as yet, but based on what they are about and, you know, what I have read up on as regards, you know, their approach to early childhood education. And it's local to New York, but perhaps they have, you know, sister or brother, you know, schools elsewhere in the country. It's called Little Maroons. And it kind of defines itself as a child care cooperative. And it seems to be really embracing the principles of, you know, the Maroons and of Russell Maroon Schultz. It seems that Russell Schultz himself, in fact, is involved in its origins, you know, and it's a child-centered, seemingly African-centered and, you know, just very focused institution. And it's been around for some time now, you know. So just to put out there, I can't tell off top if they have any, you know, charter involvement or the like, but it is a kind of cooperative effort toward the education of young people. And, you know, they've been out here for some time, if I'm not mistaken, since 2012, if not earlier, you know. So, you know, I just wanted to kind of on the positive side, because we know how large negative these developments have been, unfortunately. But, you know, as I was just kind of being reminded of somewhat recently, going back over some boys' work, you know, the public school system writ large, and, you know, it's been discussed many times on the network here, wouldn't be in existence if it weren't for, you know, our ancestors, you know, ensuring that it existed, you know, directly out of pre-1865 enslavement and recognizing that, you know, there has to be some system in place for just, you know, the masses of people to learn what they need to learn about the world around them, you know. So just recognizing the importance of that, recognition of that, the significance of those origins. And, you know, it seems to me that it's not something that, unless we absolutely must, that we should just do away with, that is public education, in spite of all of the corruption that has, you know, flooded it, which is, of course, you know, enormous. And if we do need to give, you know, do away with it, it seems to me that projects such as these, such as the Little Maroons project based out of Brooklyn, you know, are taking steps in the right direction. And of course, I also wholeheartedly agree with you about the questions of homeschooling. To me, that's, you know, that's almost our first line of defense educationally.
All right. Appreciate you, Tag. This is what I'm saying, and this is, we'll get ready to close it out, is that we need to do something. We need to do something. You can't, in voting for Democrats and getting lip service for Democrats to oppose what the Republicans are doing to education. Look, the Republicans ain't doing, this is a bipartisan effort is what I'm telling people. This is, you saw that under the Obama administration. He is a champion of these charter schools. So that's the way it's going. That's the way it's going, and I don't see no mass movement out there that's going to change that course of direction. So how do we adapt? How do we adapt? How do we use what is happening to our benefit? Okay? So, because we're going to have to do something, or we're going to be the subject to of the will of others. So what I'm talking about is self-determination. We need some think tanks. We need some national conversations on this. Because we black people in education, we don't have any advocates. What advocates do we have? We know both other parties are really just two wings on the same bird. We know public education has not served us well in this country. So it's time to do something different. It's time to do something different. It's time to read the tea leaves, see which way the wind is blowing, and how do we let out our sails so we can catch that wind in the right, moving our people in the right direction. I did mention this article about Donald Trump. I can't find the quote, but there was a quote. I think it was related to 9/11, or it might have been something else. But where they talk about using catastrophic events in order to unify people. And Trump has something to say about it. I'm not going to go too in-depth on it, in this, because I only got a couple of minutes left in the broadcast. But it says on PBS.org, Trump says it will be hard to unify country without a major event. That's the way they wrote the title. These titles can be very, very manipulative. They can also be very disingenuous. And sad as it is to say, we got a lot of people that read headlines on social media and they think they know the whole story. All right, so anyway, it says, hours before his first State of the Union, President Donald Trump said Tuesday that he wants to unite the country amid tremendous divisiveness and hopes he can do it without a traumatic event affecting Americans. Trump spoke about creating a more united country during a lunch with a number of television news anchors. Trump said the United States has long been divided, including during the impeachment of former President Bill Clinton. Trump also said that Americans usually come together during times of suffering. I would love to be able to bring back our country into a great form of unity, Trump said, without a major event where people pull together. That's hard to do. But I would like to do it without that major event, because usually that major event is not a good thing. All right, I'll leave it there. Those are true words spoken by Donald Trump, CEO of USA Inc. Is that, and again, this is like a superficial type thing. People don't really, America did not unite on 9/11. That's what we saw on television and all of these patriotic commercials to give the appearance that, hey, we're all uniting. Hey, Bin Laden attacked us. And all, nope, 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 nope. There's a whole bunch of people who did not believe the lies of the government and actually believe the U.S. government facilitated those attacks. But that's what he's talking about. I wish I could recall the quote and pull it up for you. But it was a quote I came across some years ago where somebody was talking about using catastrophic events to you know, produce this unity movement to gain control or further control of the minds of the masses. So let's hope there's no false flag events, because Donald Trump, who knows, he might say, hey, let's do a false flag. I can't unify them on my own. I'm a very divisive person, so we need a terrible terrorist attack to happen so that we can unite the country. So I don't know. Anyway, that's my program, this special broadcast of BTR News, again, filling in for Blacks in Business Radio, which usually occupies the time slot 8 p.m. Eastern to 10 o'clock p.m. They'll be back on air next week with a scheduled guest, so Blacks in Business Radio will be back live. But you can also check out their archives. They had a pretty decent program last week, a very informative program last week about the financial collapse as it relates to mortgages. Had a woman on with a certain situation where they're trying to kick her out of her home. We had a black woman real estate agent call in with information that to help people in that sort of situation. So shout out to Sister CC and Robert X for Blacks in Business Radio. They'll be back next week. I will have a normally scheduled broadcast Tuesday nights. That's my normal time, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Until then, recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA, Inc., where they're still practicing slavery. Slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment makes that clear, and we need a new abolitionist movement to finally eradicate the scourge of legalized slavery from the face of this planet once and for all. Y'all be safe out there. Peace and blessings to all.